All right, so we've reached the interactive portion of this morning's worship service. Are you ready for this? I could have come up with an illustration, but instead I think it's easier or at least more helpful in this case for us to think of something ourselves. So in this morning's Old Testament reading, we come across this radical act of forgiveness of Joseph to his many brothers, forgiving them for literally throwing him in a pit and then selling him away because of their jealousy, right? And it's a seemingly foreign story to us at first, but if we stop and consider the most radical act of forgiveness you have seen in the past 5 years, maybe it's something that you've encountered personally, maybe it's just a story that you've heard. All right, have we got something? But there are these radical acts, right? Two immediately came to my mind. Technically, I broke my own rule. This is the past 10 years. The one was from 2006, and I heard you saying this one, Michelle, right? So if we go back to 2006, we recall the shooting at the Amish school over in Lancaster County, right? The Nickel Mines shooting, where a man went into the school, took 8 young girls hostage, shot them, causing 5 of them to die on the spot. And yet after the fact, that same community, that Amish community, came together to not only forgive that man for what he had done, for the atrocity he had committed there, but they came together to care for his mother as well. I think that's a part of the story we sometimes miss. They saw to her well-being following the death of her son. She experienced that loss in the midst of a greater community loss, yeah? Maybe one of the stories. The other one that comes immediately to mind is much more recent, right? It's in June of 2015, when a young man entered Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, in the midst of a Bible study, and shot and killed 9 of the parishioners there in the basement of that church. And yet after the fact, rather than seeking immediate retribution for the harm that had been done, this community came together to offer forgiveness to Dylan Roof, rather than to seek vengeance, right? These radical acts of forgiveness are around us. They're not just in the Old Testament. It's more than just Joseph, right? But sometimes these radical acts of forgiveness seem far too lofty. So for 30 seconds, take and hold on to a moment where you have experienced that forgiveness. It might be an everyday type of forgiveness. Maybe something you've encountered with a friend or a spouse or a brother or a sister. Maybe it's something that weighs heavier on you that you know. Hold on to it, though. Because I'm sure that if you're like me, the moments of that awareness, those times when we recognize our own need for forgiveness, can be an uncomfortable moment, yeah? It's not exactly the most feel-good realization to have to look our own personal failures in the face and to admit to their validity, to admit to the truth of our own shortcoming actions. I know it's not fun for me. I know that there are times, both as the one offering forgiveness and as the one receiving forgiveness, that I would prefer justice over forgiveness. There are times when I would rather see the system work. I would rather hold others to and be held to the eye for an eye model of justice, like we discussed between me and my siblings last week. Why? Because it's procedural. Predictable. It makes sense. It's a clear system of input with outcomes. We can count on such a system to work the way it was designed. Forgiveness, though? Forgiveness is messy. It opens up a whole myriad of possibilities, some of which we may not like very much. We can see that dynamic taking place in this morning's gospel text. Because immediately following Jesus' procedures on how we are to maintain community in the face of conflict that we heard last week, Matthew goes on to describe this episode. Once again, spurred by our good friend Peter, and ending with a parabolic riddle from Jesus. See, after Jesus defined the quality of how to face those who have wronged you, Peter now wants to know how many times we should be engaged in such acts of interpersonal restoration and forgiveness. And perhaps he offers his suggestion tongue-in-cheek, Maybe he's ribbing John and James, the other disciples, to the sign as he posits the following ridiculous notion. How many times should we forgive Jesus? As many as 7 times? See, to Peter and his disciples, and the disciples, this is an outlandish, even a hilarious notion. See, there's no way that Peter picked the number 7 just at random. This number, this figure, is laced with subtle significance to the people of the Torah. For them, the number 7 is the figure of divine perfection and totality. It represents completeness and wholeness. It represents the shared being of the created with the Creator. It's no coincidence, then, that the writer of Genesis ruminates the process of God's creation as spanning over a 7-day period. It represents totality and penultimate completion. Thus, Peter's suggestion that he should forgive his neighbor 7 times should sound comical. It's an outlandish suggestion to think that he or anyone could forgive so totally or so perfectly. Yet Jesus sees no joke. Instead, he takes Peter's suggestion and compounds it upon the disciples. Not just 7 times, Jesus says, but 77 times. That's how often you should offer forgiveness to your brother or sister. And it feels like an absolutely ludicrous suggestion. To forgive somebody 77 times? To forgive with more totality than God's perfection compounded upon itself? I mean, I would struggle to forgive someone for the same offense 2 or 3 times in a row, let alone with such a wholeness as what Jesus is suggesting here. It's a staggering notion. Yet such a radical offering is exactly what the kingdom of heaven is like, Jesus says. To make the point, he follows up his statement with another parable to demonstrate what he is talking about. Now, if we were to contemporize it, accounting for the transactions between denarii and talents to modern-day U.S. dollars, and accounting for 2,000 years of inflation, and removing the problematic reality of slavery that surrounded Jesus, this would become the parable of the CEO who went to settle accounts with his employees, each of whom had an annual salary of about $15,000. The CEO started with the one who owed him $3 billion, representing multiple lifetimes of work. After the employee recognized that he could not pay, the employee begged the CEO to have patience, and he would repay everything. And having pity for the employee, the CEO sent him out and forgave his debt. Later, however, that same employee went out and saw another of his fellow employees who owed him about $5,000. Grabbing him to the side, he ordered his fellow employee to pay back all that he owed. The second employee pleaded, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you." But the first was having none of it, and he had the employee fired and thrown into prison. It's an audacious story. It's a story that demonstrates the audacity of that petition for us in the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Such radical forgiveness, followed by such a stingy sense of justice, should offend us. But this is exactly how it is with the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says. This is how God chooses to first look at us, looking at each of us with our complete sets of failures, and shortcomings, and wrongdoings. God looks with such a totality of indebtedness, and God pities us. I think 9 times out of 10, that's the reason Kelsey forgives me as well, right? It's a sense of pity, not because I deserve a sense of forgiveness, but because she looks on me, poor wretch that I am, and has pity on me. Moved by such pity, God chooses to forgive us for those places where we have failed as well. Yet the kicker of such forgiveness is that it opens the door to all manner of possibilities, even the ones we don't want. Like the first employee, there are times when we may take such monumental acts of forgiveness, brushing aside such insurmountable wrongs, to turn around only to demand justice for the next minor offense that comes our way. It's our sad reality. Yet it's the freedom that we are given in God's mercy. See, you have already been forgiven. You have already been cleared of any offense that you can imagine. Yes, as many as 77 times you have been given mercy by the God who loves you so much that the sending of God's Son to die for you seemed the right and proper recourse. The God whose perfect totality has been expressed from the beginning of creation itself has looked to you with the pity of a divine heart, the heart that continues to find you worth loving and even dying for. This is the kingdom of heaven. Your place in that kingdom is assured and grounded in the mercy of God's ever-loving forgiveness for you, no matter what failure or shortcoming or inaction or otherwise seemingly insurmountable debt you may possess. See, Jesus' injunction this morning is to set before us the lofty goal of divine forgiveness. We may be surprised to hear the call to forgive one another even as many as 77 times. Yet here it is. Reminded of, then, and grounded in the forgiveness first shown us, we are free to pursue such lofty heights, knowing that the mercy of God goes before us, regardless of our outcome. Thanks be to God for mercy such as this. Amen.